Tom finds a parking spot as near the door as possible and brings the car to a lurching halt as its wheels slip a bit on the ice. They pull on their gloves and tighten their stocking caps, get out, and, leaning into the wind, trudge unevenly towards the main entrance. Their escort parks a few rows away and follows them in. Four guys enter in succession as the elderly greeter, standing on a rubber mat, waves each of them a half-hearted welcome while wishing the damn door would close so he could warm up. Once inside, Tom and Bob wander aimlessly through the cavernous empty store, picking randomly at things that catch their attention. Nondescript metallic music from speakers mounted in the steel rafters echoes through the building, while an occasional squawked page punctuates the drab wasteland of gaudy low-grade merchandise. Tom and Bob gravitate towards the electronics section, as usual. All around them, on shelf after shelf, nearly all the way to the ceiling, are TVs. Big old glass tube sets, giant HD, LCD, and plasma displays, home entertainment system components, TVs with built-in DVDs. As the walls of images flash in unison to a common video feed of an action-adventure movie, they walk down each aisle and look enviously at the large screens. Pointing at one in particular, Tom says, "Look at the size of that. It's huge, man. Do you ever see such a clear TV picture? How the hell do they do that? I don't know. Look how thin it is, too. Wish I had one. Can you imagine what a football game would be like on one of these? It would be like sitting on the 50-yard line. Sure is nice looking. It's almost like you're there. Wonder what a porn flick would look like. You'd be in cardiac arrest, dude. Yeah, but look at the price. $2,400. Not on our income. Oh, well, wouldn't fit in the car anyway. Regular size porn for now, I guess," says Bob. Moving on, they spot the MP3 players and accessories. Peering through the plastic window of the display case at each, they wish they had the money to get even one. Everyone their age has one, but they don't. "Bob, look at this MP3 player. Geez, 30 gigabytes, says Tom. "You any idea what a gigabyte is? It's bigger than a megabyte, I know that. Says it holds 40 hours of video or 7,500 songs. Geez, are there 7,500 songs? Probably. I never could figure out how you're supposed to get the video into it. Do they have a camcorder or something? Tom puzzles. "No, you connect it to a computer. That's how you load them." "Ah, so you need a computer, too. This could run into money. I guess I'll stick to radio. But I still would like to have one, with or without video." Bob pokes through the audio section, looking at bulky systems with bulging speakers, while Tom wanders over to a large flat-panel TV with an electric guitar attached. He picks it up and quickly discovers he can play the guitar, and the music will follow his rhythms as he strums invisible strings. The display shows the chords and an animated guitarist gyrating to the tune. Instant visions of being a rock star flash to mind as his face lights in adolescent joy. Acting out the part, he quickly begins a full stage act, carrying the concept of the air guitar to a new extreme. Tom spots him and wanders over. After watching him patiently for a minute, he says, "You planning on doing that professionally?" "Yeah, man," Bob intones with the music, giving a slashing downstroke across the imaginary strings, causing the speakers to bleat out the next chord of the song. "I'm a natural-born rock star." "Yeah, well, don't give up your day job just yet. And here, don't hog that thing. Let me try it, too." Then Tom repeats the experience, and they're both seriously enjoying themselves, lost to their real lonely plight of being on their own in an empty discount store with no audience of any kind other than their unnoticed trackers. Eventually, Bob moves a few feet further along the aisle and finds a video game console and begins shooting, defending Earth from alien invaders. Tom notices and joins him, taking the other console. They continue to eagerly target bug-like creatures for another 10 minutes. Eventually, Tom and Bob move on to the computer section and fiddle with each laptop and desktop machine they find. Next, they try every digital camera and camcorder, looking over all the controls, settings, comparing the view screens, and checking the memory capacity. Then they browse through the cell phones, GPS navigation systems, and satellite receivers. Finally, after about an hour of this, they move on to the luggage section. Tom spots the backpacks and rummages through them until he pulls out a black one and says, "This look okay to you? I need one. It's like I saw some guy had the other night. What do you think?" "What exactly do you need a backpack for?" "I don't know. All the college guys have them. I thought it might look cool. They carry books in them. You don't have any books. So I can get some books. Do you intend to read the books?" "No, why should I read them?" "Then explain to me why the hell you want to carry them around on your back." "It looks cool." Bob shakes his head and rolls his eyes in an exasperated gesture. Tom's cell phone rings. He drops the backpack into the bin and flips open the phone. He grimaces when he sees the caller ID. "It's Joe," he says as he clicks the talk button and says, "Hello." David's trackers slip into the next aisle to listen. "Hey, Joe, what's up?" says Tom. Yeah, we're at Discount Mart right now. We can get them. Anything else? Okay, we'll swing by there after we leave here. What time? Right, will do. See you there." Tom flips the phone shut and turns to Bob and says, "That was Joe. He wants us to get some stuff and meet him at the Prairie Buffet at noon." "What does he want?" "A 4-gallon gasoline container, 16 pint-sized glass pop bottles, and some small dish towels, and we should fill the gas can."
"With gasoline? Bottles? What the hell does he want that stuff for?" answers Bob.
"Oh yeah, a little bottle of liquid detergent."
"Huh?
Don't you know a Molotov cocktail when you hear one? You mix the gasoline with the detergent, fill the bottles, and stuff the towel tightly through the the top. You light the part of the towel sticking out and hurl the thing. Breaks and the gasoline explodes. The detergent makes the gasoline stick to whatever you hit. I saw it on TV. Holy shit, I don't like the sound of this. What's he gonna have us do? Firebomb that place? Answers Bob as a look of fear descends upon his face. I don't know, man, but it sure sounds like something's gonna get firebombed, says Tom, as his expression goes grim as well. They both stare at one another for a moment, then Bob says, Molotov cocktails, damn. We start tossing firebombs, we're gonna be targets. I just know it. He's setting us up for target practice. We're throwaways, man. We're dead men. We're getting into some serious shit here. Pete didn't come all the way from Des Moines for the climate. He's up to something nasty. I got a real bad feeling about this. Yeah, so do I, but what the fuck are we gonna do about it? What can we do? Nothing, that's what. Let's get out of here. Let's get the fuck out of Nebraska. Let's get in the car and drive to California, man. We can make it. If we stay here, I don't think we're gonna live very long, says Bob. Listen, we just do as we're told and hope for the best. Joe will take care of us. Forget about running. We're stuck here. We have no money, no families, no friends, nowhere to hide. Let's get some damn coats. We look like shit. Then we get the other stuff. They walk sullenly off towards the men's clothing section, both realizing that things are not going well. One of their trackers follows them. The other phones Lance and fills them in on what they overheard. Tom and Bob pay for their purchases and walk slowly back to the car. They stop for the gas. Bob jumps up and down in the frigid wind, trying to keep warm, stomping his feet during the cold weather dance while the gas nozzle slowly pumps into the car's tank. When the nozzle kicks, he takes it and fills the gas can. He replaces the nozzle into the pump and puts the cap on the can. He carefully puts the can into the back seat, wedged so as not to bounce around. Bob buys cigarettes and a newspaper, then pays for the gas. Their shadows wait patiently at the curb. Time, noon. Back on the road, Tom and Bob drive to the Prairie Buffet, located in a strip mall just off the interstate a few exits to the east. Tom parks the car in the lot. They sit and wait for Joe. Let's put the new coats on, says Tom. You got your penknife? There must be 20 tags to take off. Yeah, here it is, as he hands the small penknife to Bob. He reaches into the back seat and pulls the bags with the coats into the front, looks in one and says, here, this one's yours. They both begin finding, cutting, and pulling the tags from the coats, and finally decide they're ready to be worn. They hop outside the car and quickly strip off their old coats. They're still both wearing their club shirts from two nights before. Rapidly putting on the new coats, they jump quickly back into the car. Bob says, put the heater up. It's cold out there. You bet. Hey, that doesn't look half bad. Yeah, I guess so. Yours looks okay, too. Then they sit there waiting, smoking cigarettes and listening to the radio. About 10 minutes later, a car pulls in and parks next to them. Joe gets out and waves to them to follow him. They hop out and all three walk to the main door of the restaurant. At the entrance, Joe picks up the tab for the buffet. They hang their coats on a rack near the door. Joe's phone is in his coat. Tom and Bob left theirs in the car. Todd, back at Maroon, is monitoring and going nuts. He's recorded the part about the Molotovs from Joe's phone, which his viruses have now infected. He's also infected Tom and Bob's phones, but all the phones are now out of audio pickup range. He contacts David and Lance and tells them about what he's learned, but he says he's got nothing more for now. At the restaurant, they pick up trays and silverware and start getting their food. Tom and Bob stick together as they browse the steam tables. Bob quietly says to Tom, man, this feels like our last supper. Don't be so negative, man. We'll be okay. They sit down at a large table, both on one side. Joe arrives and sits opposite. They take their plates off the trays, and Tom takes the trays and puts them on the next table. So, how you guys doing? Your arms feeling better? I see you got some new jackets. They look nice, real nice. Sorry about the other night. Yeah, the arm's feeling a bit better. We'll survive, says Tom. Good. Now, how would you like to get even? Yeah. What's up? Says Bob cautiously. The plan is to make a quick break-in at the club and finish this mic business tonight. Pete's figured out the layout. He wants to send four guys to the loading dock door on the southwest side. From there, they go up to the apartments on the top floor and take care of Mike. You gonna do this when the club's open or closed? Asks Tom. When it's open. At night. When the place is full. So how are you gonna get in without being seen? Asks Tom. Well, we create a little diversion, that's how. Something that will grab their attention while we get the loading dock door open. In the confusion, we get in. And what's gonna happen to get the loading dock door open? Asks Bob, biting into a drumstick of fried chicken. Sid sets off some smoke bombs and fireworks on the other side of the club. Mark slips into the elevator room, opens the loading dock door, says Joe as he opens and spills a packet of sugar into his coffee. No locks? None. Just a bolt, replies Pete. So what's our part and what's these bottles and gasoline for? Asks Tom as he smears a patty of butter onto a dinner roll. You know how to make a Molotov cocktail? Yeah, I saw it on a program on TV, says Tom. Well, make 16 of them. 8 of them will go up top and be used to firebomb the apartments on the way out to make sure there's no evidence left. The other 8 will be used to hit the ground floor. And where do we come in? I'm providing 4 of my guys for the top. Pete wants you 2 to go in after my guys and go to the second floor balcony and wait. When my guys come down the stairs, you light and hurl the other 8 Molotov cocktails out onto the dance floor and make a run for it. There'll be a van outside the loading dock door waiting for you. Jeez, that place will be full of people. Right, Pete wants to send a message. He wants the place turned into an inferno. Says it will discourage reporters in the future. Some fucking message. And what happens to us? The security guards are armed. We saw that. Won't they be shooting at us? Asks Bob. Not a problem. The security guards will have their hands full with the fire, smoke, panic after the first firebomb hits. The exits will be blocked with people covered in burning gasoline. They'll be done in less than half a minute. How do we get out? Through the loading dock door with the others. Won't there be crowds of people out there? They'll attack us. Jeez, guys, fire a few shots. Wound a couple. They'll scatter quick enough. Funny thing about a crowd. One gunshot and it's a herd stampeding the other way. They're unarmed. There'll be no problem. Anyway, half of them will be on fire. Nothing distracts a crowd like someone running by burning like a torch, says Joe, laughing a bit. Anyway, we're going to set off a few car bombs across the street in front of the club. No one will notice you guys. The place will be a madhouse. Piece of cake. It sounds like we could end up being used for target practice, says Bob. Don't worry. It'll go down fine. The fires will be their main concern. You'll have it done less than 30 seconds, then get the fuck out of there. Oh, man, this isn't good, says Bob. You really want to kill and maim all those people? Hey, it's no skin off my back. It'll be no problem, Joe says coldly. Guys, this is your big chance to move up. Don't worry. Things will work out. Another thing, guys, you don't want to cross Pete, do you? He's still not too happy about the last time you screwed things up. I guess not. What time does this go down, says Tom. Be ready about 6:30. Mark and Sid will pick you up and fill you in on the details and give you some untraceable handguns. Have the Molotovs ready by then and safely boxed. By the way, don't smoke on the car with the gasoline fumes, understand? Yeah, no smoking, says Bob. The deal is set to go down around 10 p.m. Okay, guys, that's the job. If you don't want to take it, let me know now and I'll tell Pete. You in or out? Yeah, we're in. Like we have some choice, says Tom as Bob stares down at his plate. Very sensible decision. Healthier, too. Here's a little entertainment. Compliments of Pete, says Joe, handing a packet of crystal meth to Tom. Joe stands up and says,